You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to your post-match Raw on AI Pro, podcasting to you from my field here in beautiful rural Ireland. I'm Trev Denny. Joining me to give their reactions to Liverpool 0, Chelsea 0 in the Premier League from Anfield are Dave Hendrick and Carl Matchett. There are various reasons why we're not going to go long today, Dave. Scheduling, all sorts of different reasons for different people. Carl may not be feeling 100% at the moment as well. And yet the greatest reason for not going long here is because there's very little to talk about, because that was an atrocious game of football.
That was an appalling game. It was like watching, you know, Steve Bruce's Birmingham against Tony Pulis's Stoke in the mid-2000s. A genuinely dreadful game of football with two teams that played with a bit of fear about them. Neither side really seemed to want to commit much in terms of going to win the game. They probably had the better of it over the 90-odd minutes. In terms of, you know, half decent chances that they created, but it was just a really bad game of football. I'm happy with the clean sheet. That's the one positive that I'll take from there. I'm happy that Darwin is back. But other than that, I'm really struggling to think of anything positive to say about that game. We were compact at times, and at least in open play, our defensive structure was a little bit better than it has been. But even at that, I'm really grasping at straws.
Yeah, an awful lot of that is down to heroics by Ibu Konate at times as well. If we're being honest, he does read the game very well. He's a good lad to get across and make an interception or see a run or whatever. And yeah, I wanted to lean into that as well, but not really sure how much I can. And Carl, to bring you in straight away as well. I mean, look. As Dave says, we're going to struggle to pick out too many highlights, to be honest, from either team. But the game has left me with, it's one of those left with more questions than answers ones, because I'm not 100% sure what it was that Jurgen was trying to do with the lineup in the first place. Anyway, I think it's safe to say after the first half that it didn't work. Then we saw a raft of changes. And we were struggling to see any great pattern emerge at all to our play. Just some of the basic stats. I know this is kind of your domain rather than mine, but when you only have three shots on target in the entirety of the game, and the Reds only have 47% of the ball at home, and have only completed 473 passes, when, you know, a decent Reds top end performance is quite often worrying 800. These are all, like, you know, what do stats mean? Well, they do speak to a certain level of sloppiness there, I think, that was evident even from the eye test, Carl.
Yeah,
I think back to a podcast of not too long ago, which I think ended up being titled The Browning or something similar. And it was very brown out there today. That's the first thing I'll say. I'm going to play devil's advocate here because, quite frankly, the game was boring enough without need to make the podcast boring by agreeing with each other. So not necessarily that I believe this, but let's play along with this anyway. I think it was good to see the lineup changed from the last league game. I think it was good to see certain players left in the side who played in midweek and maybe contributed to a bit more of an impact in certain off the ball scenarios. I think there was some pre-game notes about why players were on the bench and stuff like that, and I don't believe it in the slightest. I think there was some leavings out today for the simple fact of leaving them out because the performances haven't been good enough. I think we were more compact on the ball. More compact off the ball defensively. I think we were a little bit better at playing from deep areas through midfield today, but there's quite a big disconnect between the rest of the team and the forward at the minute. I think if we'd have played a more cohesive unit than Chelsea are at the minute, we probably would have struggled to create anything at all. I think if we'd have played a better attacking side than Chelsea, we probably would have lost today. But that said, I think there were improvements compared to the last couple of games. And if we just need to try and get ourselves back on an even footing, then, you know, this was a step forward from Brentford and this was about 7 mile run forward from Brighton. So we'll take that, I guess.
Yeah. An element of having to work hard for those slightly upbeat comments. And I do appreciate them because it is important to try and see things from all perspectives. And speaking of, Dave, can we just have a quick look at that Liverpool team? I've alluded to a little bit of a quizzical eyebrow raised on my noggin when I saw it. Not necessarily the personnel as much as the positioning of said personnel. So we went with Alisson. Jimmy Miller came in because apparently Trent still has some sort of an issue with a hamstring injury, I think they were saying. Konate and Gomez continued with Rob on the other side. Stefan Bacicic held on to his position in the middle of the park alongside Thiago and Naby Keita. And we went with a front three of Elliott, Salah and Gakpo, with Cody Gakpo central, Harvey Elliott on the left wing, and Mo Salah in his familiar position. Which is where I started wondering about the effectiveness of that, because we've seen Cody Gakpo be wonderfully effective raiding in from the left. In fact, pretty much all of the good Cody Gakpo things I've seen seem to be him drifting in from the left, where he has been excellent. I'm not understanding this idea of trying to turn him into our target man in the absence of Darwin today, when Mo Salah, who has been, I think it's safe to say we can possibly have this conversation now, really miles off what Mo Salah is capable of. I know it was really not, it wasn't kosher to say that. Some people were getting mightily defensive and say, look at the goals he's got. Okay, whatever. I think we can say it now. He's way off. This is possibly the best attacker I've seen in a Liverpool shirt when all is said and done, if he has a successful season next year. And he's nowhere near where he should be. So I was really, really curious to hear what you thought about that lineup, specifically the way he went with the attacking third.
Are you that person who has everything? The coolest merch? And those must-have fan threads? Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
So, no problem with the defence. If Trent has a hamstring injury, he didn't train for a couple of days during the week. That was mentioned by somebody yesterday. So fair enough. Jimmy Milner played well in midweek. So that's grand. No real issue with the midfield because they played well against Wolves. And in terms of the personnel, you wouldn't have minded the front three. But like you said, it's the positioning of them. Harvey Elliott is not a left winger in a front three. Now, you could maybe play him left side of a four and not ask him to be trying to beat a man. Just ask him to recycle the ball, get crosses in, whatever. Gakpo through the middle is just a really weird thing. Now, I could see the logic in it if we were playing pace either side of him. So if Darwin had started, myself and Carl talked about this on Scouted, if Darwin was going to start, then I could see Gakpo through the middle. But not if it was going to be Harvey, because now you've got two players that don't have explosive pace. In Harvey's case, very little pace anyway. And Mo hasn't been great this season. And people will point to goals and they'll point to assists and they'll say that's proof that he's playing well. But it isn't proof that he's playing well. Goals and assists might colour the view of an overall performance, but the action of scoring a goal or creating a goal takes less than 1 minute in a 95-minute match. And for many games, Mo has not been having an impact. And a lot of people are saying it since the World Cup. I think it's before that. I don't think Mo has been at the level we've needed him to be at most of the season. And today he was really poor. I mean, he showed some decent little flashes in the first half, but we weren't getting him the ball enough. And when we were getting him the ball, there wasn't enough movement from the other two. Gakpo was just sort of loitering on the edge of the box, and Harvey was standing way outside the box, and neither of them were looking to get in. Naby wasn't getting towards the box enough to give Mo an option to cut back. So while I would say Mo didn't play well, I also don't think those around him helped him, because we've got two lads playing into position and we've got a midfield that very good technically, but not the quickest in the world. So when Mo's getting the ball and it's 40 yards ahead of everybody else, by the time he beats Kukure and steps and comes in field, the only real option he has is Gakpo stood on the edge of the box. He's got no one else to pass to. So I think he's been let down by the coaching staff as well in terms of how they've set the team up today. But I don't think Mo's had a particularly good season. I think goals do colour people's view. Like, if you take Bobby as an example, everyone likes to say, well, Bobby's having a great season, or he was having a great season. Look at the goals he's gotten. Yeah, but look at the goals he's gotten. Bobby got 3 goals and 2 assists against Bournemouth, so 5 goal involvements. He got 3 goal involvements against Rangers and two against Brighton. And for the other 1,100 minutes of the season, Bobby has 3 goal involvements. Mo is getting goals and was getting goals and assists, but he wasn't playing well. He wasn't impacting games the way we've seen him impact games over the last 5 years he's been at the club.
Yeah, I think you can trace that sort of drop off all the way through to the middle of last season as well. Because
post-AFCON, he hasn't been the same player.
Still stand by the fact that if we had top-end Mo Salah for the last half of last season, we have one of the two majors alongside the two cups. Maybe all four could have got done. That was the difference. Again, it's not his fault. We were reliant on him being that guy. And Carl, to bring you in on Chelsea here, a lot of speculation on the BT Sport commentary team. God bless them. They were just mightily confused as the game was going on about how a team could change formations within a game, seeming to suggest that Graham Potter was either some sort of wizard or actually had no clue what he was doing. I'm not sure they knew where they were going with it. They do have, thanks to Todd Bowley, a remarkable and ever increasing squad of footballers. He went today with a team which had Kepa in goal, Chalaba, Silva and Badiashile, their new boy, then Hall, Jorginho, Gallagher, Cucurella, Ziyech, Havertz and Mount filling out the rest of the positions. And of course they could at times look as if they had a three at the back, and at times far more traditional looking shape to them. Would you like to talk us through what you think it is Graham Potter's trying to do there and around that selection that he put out there? Because on the bench today for them, as Pilicueta came on to great effect, to be fair to him, much as I dislike the lad, they also had Koulibaly on there, Chukwuemeka, who came on, Loftus-Cheek is on the bench, Mudrik came on, looked good, Aubameyang's on that bench as well, and Fofana, along with Humphreys and Bettinelli. Would you be clear on exactly what it is that Graham Potter and the Potter Ball 2.0 is going to look like at Chelsea from looking at that team today?
I think it gave some good indications, because when I looked at the lineup, I didn't actually know if they were playing any one of about three different systems. And I think that's Potter Ball in a nutshell. I mean, you saw there was lots of swapping over positions and changing on and off the ball. BT had themselves a good 20-minute discussion in the first half trying to work out what formation they were playing every 5 minutes. It's pretty much the same as it always is, to be perfectly honest. It's one shape on the ball and one shape off the ball. So I'm not sure what the mystery was there, but it could have been wing-backs with Kugure as one of the left-sided centre-back, obviously, and Hall down the left where he has been. Hall, coming through the youth academy, was a central midfield player, which is obviously where he ended up playing at the start today. But I also wondered if it was going to be more of a fixed 4-2-3-1 with him a little bit further forward, outside Mount, for example, because a couple of times in game against the bigger sides, Potter has actually gone to a bit more of a line of four and a line of four, basically, across the midfield. So it could have been anything, really. And I think that that's the big trait, let's say, of Potter's teams. In terms of the actual on-the-ball work, I think you can see parts of it. Like, I think he's already getting quite a lot more out of certain players. I mean, Hakim Ziyech today probably put in more work rate there than he has done in 99% of his other Chelsea performances, to be honest. I think he had a really good game on and off the ball. There's still some elements that, I know it's not right to compare Brighton because they're a much smaller club, obviously, but in terms of that penalty box presence, goal scoring, all those sort of issues that Brighton did have under Potter, you can also see them being replicated here at the minute. So there's still bits to sort out, but I think they are slightly getting there. There's just a few players who I don't really think quite fit. I don't really think he's worked out how to use Mason Mount particularly well yet. Probably say the same for Sterling, obviously. Mudrik, when he came on, we'll get to him, I guess, but you can see that he is the type of player who will fit very, very well with what he wants to do.
Dave, you want to have a word or two about Chelsea before we get into the details of the match, you and I, the first half?
No, just like as Carl said, they're a very confusing team when you see their players listed with no real notion of where they might play. As Carl said, it could have been any of three or four formations to start the game, but as it turned out, it was a fairly straightforward system. I do like the look of that Lewis Hall, I have to say. I wouldn't be surprised if he does end up as a left back long term. A little bit of a Trent type move. I think he's got really good passing range. He's very comfortable on the ball. He's decent defensively as well, which is a plus.
Yeah, I know it's very anti-hipster and very bottom red or whatever the current definition the kids are going with these days, but I do find myself remarkably envious of all these clubs buying all these players and getting to see their new shiny things coming out onto the pitch on occasion. It's a bit of a whine from me, but it's hard to avoid that feeling. Can we just talk about one incident right at the start here? Because there's no point in getting into the details of the first half without acknowledging that the first half starts. Well, actually, I think on 2 minutes, Robbo goes in hard on, I think it was Gallagher, I'm not sure. But on 2 minutes, there, a goal up, theoretically. It goes to VAR, Kai Havertz has the ball in the net. It's a corner, which is helped on to Thiago Silva, who has an opportunity to score, but he hits the post. Now, I think Ali was getting across pretty well, but again, that's hard to be definitive about. And as the ball comes back off the post, Havertz sweeps it home, but he's adjudged to be offside. Now, there's a couple of things here. The veracity of the call, I think, is fairly straightforward. I don't think there's too much to argue about. But you'd have to say there's probably zero excuse for us being so ridiculously open from a set piece, which we continue to be for the whole game. Any set piece where, my auntie would say, like turkeys on thumbtacks, just absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. And for that to be the start of the game, I'm sorry, but that sets a sort of a precedent, and you're going to have nerves coming in then, and you're going to have nervous football by our defenders. How in the name of God can we be that exposed so early in the match, Dave? Like, it's not just one shot that gets away, it's two shots taken away.
And in fact, completely unmarked. Two unmarked shots, unchallenged, in our 6-yard box.
In our 6-yard box, unless I'm mistaken, there's an original touch on as well to Thiago Silva. I'm not 100% sure who it was. So, talk to me about that, because that's infuriating.
It is. I mean, we used to be so formidable at set pieces at both ends of the pitch. We used to laughingly call ourselves Set Piece FC. We never conceded goals from set pieces. And we used to score for fun from set pieces. And now we don't score and we give up chances galore. I mean, look at the Brighton game. They had a couple of chances from set pieces. Brentford absolutely battered us from set pieces. And this has been an ongoing concern. And, you know, you'd look at today's team, and you can kind of understand it a little bit, because James Milner is not a big lad and he's not a particularly good header. He's not a particularly springy fella when it comes to defending set pieces. Yeah. Andy Robertson is small. Naby is small. Thiago is small. Bacicic is tall, but very, very lightweight. Gakpo is tall, but seems very lightweight. Salah is small. Elliot is small. So you've got basically Ibu and Joe Gomez, and Joe Gomez isn't particularly good in the air for a centre back. So you've basically got Ibu trying to do everything by himself. But to be that switched off that early in a game, that's very, very concerning. Like, we're 2 minutes in and lads are asleep. And I'd have been really interested to see if the Thiago Silva one went in, if it would have stood, because it looked to me like Milner played him onside at the back post.
So we'll have a look at the next few incidents of the match together, Dave. On 5 minutes, we saw a pattern which would reestablish itself a couple of times, where Cody Gakpo blams one over on 5 minutes. It was a Mo Salah cutback after a very good ball by Stevan Bacicic out to Mo. We were playing some nice stuff. Thiago looked fairly sharp at that stage of the game. On 13 minutes, this is just worth a mention, those weirdos were singing God Save the Queen, which was duly booed. They're so odd. Decent bit of cover by Jimmy Milner in 16 minutes. I thought, you know, as you said, he did well in the week, and you know what you're going to get from James Milner in that situation. And I never mind seeing that right back when the game's ahead of him. I think he's okay like that. But a little tribute to yourself on 17 minutes. I noticed in a hoof watch, basically, a tremendous move, and ended by the aforementioned Milner with a Henderson tribute hoof. Basically one of these launched crosses where, like, they've got, what is it, 79 centre backs and we have a load of little lads in there. So that's a great idea. 19 minutes, Cody Gakpo robbed Hall and hit another wild shot while he was leaning backwards. And then on 21, which is where we're going to finish it, Hall flashed one across the face of goal after a decent move by them. So it's kind of a little bit cut and thrust over and back. No decent real efforts. Gakpo a bit wild and snatchy when he could have been a bit more composed. And it makes you wonder, doesn't it? Like, all of these things feed into each other, and you'd be a little bit sick of waiting for all of these guys to just click. Talk to me about that opening 20, if there's anything you want to fill in or comment on.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very scrappy opening 20, and I thought at times we seemed to be trying to force things a little bit too much through the middle of the field. I thought Thiago and Naby both were a little bit lax in their passing and gave away a couple of cheap balls that they really shouldn't. I thought Bacicic did the same. But they were keeping at least a compact shape. Robbo wasn't getting forward as much as we would have wanted him to, but I wonder how much of that was just, you know, not wanting to overcommit, knowing it's Harvey ahead of him who doesn't have the pace to cover back if Robbo's at a position. We got into a weird habit early in the first half of just flinging in blind crosses, and Milner was probably the worst culprit for that. Who are you crossing to? Like, you're clipping them over Gakpo's head, so you're crossing to Harvey Elliott against a 6'1" Chalaba playing at right back or right side centre back or whatever shape that was. It just didn't make any sense to me. Gakpo, I mean, the shot from the Mo cutback, you could understand him taking that shot on. You know, first time shot, just have a go. And he strikes the ball. Like, he genuinely does make lovely contact with the ball when he shoots. But the second one, when he wins that ball back, look at your options. Look at your options. Don't be shooting in that position. Like, you're not going to get a shot on target. They've got three men in front of you. The shot is not on here. Try and do something else. Bring someone else into the game. If you have to, go backwards and reset things and just keep possession, because we felt like we were losing control a little bit at that point when he had that shot. They were starting to get a bit more confident. They were slowing themselves down. They were building out from the back. And it felt like he just needed to put his foot on the ball and shift it backwards, even to Naby, and just give us 2 to 3 minutes of possession just to settle things back down again. But by taking the shot on, it just sort of amped the tempo up again. And you mentioned the whole opportunity. I mean, our defensive line in that moment, Joe Gomez is 2 yards behind everybody else. I don't know what's going on. There's no communication. I don't know who's meant to be calling the line in that circumstance. Like, Robbo's facing the ball, so he can't be. Milner probably should be calling the line, but he's too far out to the right. So whether Gomez can hear him or not, I don't know. It was a little bit, we were just a little bit scattered, and we were a little bit soft in that first half, especially those early stages. We just seemed like we were lacking a little bit of energy, a little bit of drive. Whether certain lads were tired after the midweek game, I don't know, but there was something missing, and maybe it was just a bit of pace and attack, because other than Mo, we didn't have that. We didn't have any outlet, and we became very predictable. Like, they knew what we were going to do. If the ball was going into Gakpo, they were just letting him get the ball because they knew he was going to knock it off first time. He wasn't turning to have a go at them. And if he was, he didn't have the pace to go by them. Elliot was a real non-factor. And Mo, like I said earlier, he had a couple of moments where he did something good and then he followed it up with something really bad. I thought his decision-making was really poor. But yeah, the first 21 minutes didn't fill me with joy for what was to come. Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have 3 podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on eplindex.com. The podcasts are my own Two-Footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin DeVries and his crew on the EPL Roundtable, they're every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, not a lot of joy to follow either, Carl, because as Dave sort of alluded to, they did start to get their tails up around about this point. 24 minutes, Gallagher has a snap volley at Alisson, who holds it. And then on 31 minutes, the main man makes a fantastic save from Badiashile with a header from a free kick, which came over from the left-hand side. Now, you could say that the new boy should do better for them, but again, it's Ali being hugely important for us. We then looked really ropey from a free kick that came in from the right-hand side. As we've already alluded to, set-piece chaos for us as a thing now, it would appear. Yellow card on 33 minutes for Stefan Matic, who comes in late on haul after a pretty loose Thiago pass, one of those ones Dave was alluding to, caused a bit of chaos. Hendo tribute Hoof Cross number two by Milner on 34 minutes when there was an opportunity to do something a bit more dangerous. And on 38, Thiago had a shot blocked and a follow-up shot saved. A decent move by us in 41. We saw Robbo driving towards the goal centrally. Nice 1-2 with Mo Salah. Nothing comes of it, alas, in the end. Semi-dangerous Harvey Elliott cross on 42. And then on 45, decent opportunity, a great through ball by Naby Keita. Mo Salah did his cut in the Mo Salah position, and he lifted it over the top quite badly, considering what we know he's capable of. That would be a beautiful nerve settler right in the stroke of half time. So, I mean, like I say, they really got into it there in the mid period of the half, and we finished strongly is an exaggerated term, but at least it was something about us in those last few minutes, which I think continued as we started the second half. Anything you saw there you wanted to comment on in terms of incident or performance?
I think the primary thing there about that first half was probably the amount of not just loose passes, but actively almost dangerous passes that we gave away. I think Thiago, obviously, he was the main conduit for us all game long, so it was natural that he was trying to force the issue a little bit, but some of them were just a bit ridiculously risky, to be fair, you know, into dangerous areas, not really too close or too accurate to the player that they were supposed to be going to. I think that's probably what caused us the most problems all along. There were definitely some moments, I think, in midfield where Thiago and Bajicic in particular were sort of quite adept at working it around the first couple of players who tried to press or to challenge them. And that sort of did spark a few decent build-ups, but we didn't really have any end product in the final pass or anything at all. I think a couple of times Robertson got into decent areas after, again, good build-up, but then the cross wasn't good, the pass wasn't good. Milner, I mean, I'm not really sure what to make of Milner's performance today, to be honest, because he was into good positions and he was like manfully doing the overlapping every single time, even though he wasn't always getting it. But every single time he got into a good area, the ball was terrible. Like his long passing today, his crossing today, the set pieces today, all of those were really, really poor, and it got a bit frustrating, to be honest.
It did. And I think that's going to be that's really the feel that I have for this entire match. We talked at the very start about how it was uninspiring stuff, and there's a flatness that's coming through here as well, because we're struggling to find things that we can look at and pull apart. Sloppiness on both sides for sure. And Carl, if you stay with me as we go into the second half, it does start positively with Ibu Konate trying to lob Kepa from the halfway line, which is always good fun. And I think we did, like I mentioned there a second ago, have a little bit of fire in the belly in the opening goings of that second half. Decent pressure, quite literally the press was good in this period. On 48 minutes there was an Abbey effort which was blocked, and on 49 we had another opportunity where Cody Gakpo headed over a headed pass from Stefan Bastic. Robbo had played a free in from the left, Bastic heading the ball back across goal. And Gakpo jumps to try and head it when it's not on at all. And of course, really frustratingly, Mo Salah sort of lurking behind him where he could add a little tap-in header at the back post. Harvey Elliott was looking for a pen on 51 minutes, but BT didn't even give much of a replay. It did actually look like a foul on replay to me. And on 54, they make their first change. They bring on a Mudrick for Hall, who goes on to have quite the effect. I'm going to take it up as far as our first sub with you. 57 minutes, Gallagher should do a lot better after a poor clearance for us gives him an opportunity. And on 59, ZX sort of drifted all the way across our defence, all the way from one side to the other with the ball before shooting wildly over when, again, he could have just calmed himself and had an opportunity. I agree with you. I think it was one of the better Ziyech performances I've seen, certainly for Chelsea. But whether that was a good chance or not, it did speak to us being a little bit concerningly open. And then we make our first intervention by bringing on Darwin for Naby Keita on 62 minutes. So you might finish off with a comment on that specific change of personnel when you think it was an appropriate one at the time. As ever, the Twitter TL is absolutely riven with a contrasting views of an Abby Cade's showing today. So I'd be interested to hear what you thought of that substitution, the timing of it, and the specific person that Darwin came on for. Anything about that opening part of the second half that you want to chat about as well?
Actually, that first, what, maybe 10 minutes or so of the second half was the first game in absolutely ages where I can remember that, not in terms of obviously how good we were attacking wise, but where we were positioned and how quickly we won the ball back. It was the first time in ages that we'd had that like net stationed around the outside of their penalty box and they just couldn't get out. And it wasn't quite as intense as we do it sometimes, and it wasn't quite as, well, it was nowhere near as quality filled anyway, but it was nice to see us be that little bit more adventurous and brave in terms of our positional play and actually get the positional play right. So that we had Gomez, for example, stepping right up into the left channel to regain the ball and recycle it, put it back to Naby, to Bajcetic, that sort of thing. And we did keep them pinned in for quite a while there. So that would have been the ideal moment, I think, for everything to go right for us to score in that period, because it would have sort of probably reinforced us that that's what we need to be doing. That's just how diligently you have to be in position to get the ball back so quickly and stop them playing out and stop them running through and all the rest of it. I think that that was our best period of the game. I think the substitution was right in two ways. One, obviously, to bring Darwin on, that's fine. And two, for Cater to go off. I thought Cater was fine today. Maybe different opinions on this podcast. Like you said, there's always a bit of a discrepancy of whether Cater is great or rubbish. But I thought without the passing being good, which is a team-wide thing today, his positional work was okay. His covering in the channels was good. Not, you know, outrageous in terms of piling forward or driving forward or anything like that, but he did it a couple of times, and mostly this, as I've said before, was much more about getting a shape back in midfield, making sure that that right side of position wasn't just leaving one player to be in midfield all the time. I thought he did all of that okay. Why he had to come off was much more because he started his first game of the season in midweek and he started his second game of the season today, and it's Naby Keita. That doesn't usually go too well if you overwork him at the start. So I think it's fine for him to go off. I thought it was fine for Darwin to come on. I did not think it was fine for Javi Elliott to be put back in midfield. And I think as soon as we did that, we lost control of the rest of the match.
Yeah, 100% agree.
That's very interesting. I want to get your take on the substitution as well before we kick off, Dave, just really briefly, because again, just let me do the Bill O'Hurley asking the daft questions just for the sake of it here. So you take off Naby Keita. And that means that you have to bring in Harvey Elliott into the midfield again. And you're replacing, let's just watch this again, you're replacing Darwin Núñez, who's going to play on the front, on the left-hand side. Is there not really a clear substitution to be made there, which is do you take off Harvey Elliott, right? You know, you see where I'm going with this.
I would have said that was the moment to make a double sub. I would have said bring on Fabinho for Naby and shift Bajcetic to the right of the midfield three and bring on Darwin for Harvey, because I thought Harvey had a bit of a stinker left wing, and him going into midfield is just never a good idea. Naby, I had no problem with him going off. I think Carl's spot on. I thought he was good off the ball, but I thought he was sloppy on the ball. To his credit, he was actually trying to make things happen. He was trying to push us forward, trying to link play, trying to be creative and inventive and break down their defense. But he was a little bit sloppy with his passing. But like Carl said, he played the full 90 in midweek in his first start of the season, which was risky. And I was actually surprised he started today. I didn't think he would. But I had no problem with him coming off. That's 150 minutes of football now under his belt in a 5-day period, which is more than he'd had in the entire season leading up into Tuesday. So I didn't mind Naby going off, but it should have been a double sub. It should have been Harvey going off and either Fabinho coming on and Bastage switching, or even Curtis Jones coming on the right side of midfield, because at least he's more physical, more solid defensively, and doesn't abandon ship and abandon shape. Like Carl said, we had a really good, promising first 15. We were looking more aggressive. We were front-footed. Both centre-backs were charging into their half and looking to make things happen. And then when Harvey goes back into midfield, the midfield shape just crumbles. And it's not Harvey's fault, because Harvey isn't a midfielder. It's Jürgen's fault, or Pep and Linder's fault, or whoever's making that decision. It's their fault. So I didn't have a problem with the actual sub, but there should have been another one made at the same time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. On 64, we're in a mess at the back again, Dave. Their little flurry of attack ends with Mudrik driving the ball into the side rigging on the left-hand side. And then there's a yellow on 65 where poor old Jimmy Milner has to take out the Ukrainian, because let's just be honest, he would not have a chance of catching him. So he kind of cynically does exactly that. It's pretty much a classic professional foul. 68 minutes, Cody swivels and has a shot at the keeper after a good link with Darwin. That was a rare highlight moment. And you could see already the new boy, our main man, Darwin, having an impact. 71, there's a ball across from Gallagher to Mudrik, but again, he couldn't get his feet right. It was a dangerous position at the back post, but he just couldn't get settled. And so we take on at this point Trent for Milner in 71 minutes. Joe Gomez puts in a really good block on a Ziyech goalbound effort soon after that. And on 75, Darwin drift to the left and hit one at keeper from a very narrow angle. There wasn't much to shoot at, but at least it was a shot in anger and a shot apparently on target. Good tracking back from Darwin on 77 to rob the ball and launch a counter, and his impact was clear. It was good to see him on the field. I mean, that's one of the little positives we could say. They are wasting time at this point, which is quite indicative, tells you quite a little bit about perhaps their attitude to the result. Chalobah takes a yellow card for basically walking off the pitch for about 7 years. We do a triple sub. Henderson, Fab and Curtis come on at that stage for Cody, Harvey and Stefan Bacic, and that's going to have a big impact in terms of trying to get our shape. They bring on Aubameyang, Chukwuemeka, and as Pilicueta at that point as well, Havertz, Chalobah and Mount going off. And we might as well just see this through, because you'd love to say there's loads of brilliant opportunities and incidents for us to analyse. There's not. Trent did drive one over in 82 minutes from a pullback, I think, by Darwin after a good play, decent through ball by Henderson. It was a dangerous enough opportunity, but a really difficult effort for Trent to take off, and he goes narrowly over with it. It's a sloppy, sloppy game, Dave. I've written that down about four times in my notes. It's there again at this stage of the game. They're singing about the Queen again on 86 minutes. Fair play to them. There's a yellow for Curtis on 88 minutes or something like that. As Pilicueta had fouled him right in front of big Mick Oliver, the greatest referee of all time, he just didn't see it or didn't care. And Trent has a bit of a snappy, Curtis has a bit of a snappy revenge tackle that gets him into the book. 5 minutes are added. And the only thing that happens in those 5 minutes is there is a Chukwuemeka effort where Robbo does really well to get a block in on 92, and then right at the death we have a little bit of a flurry and Fabinho has an effort blocked. But the lack of incident, the lack of quality, the lack of really well-shaped, carved-out opportunities for both sides, if we're being honest, the lack of cohesive passing in midfield for both sides, if we're being honest, it just, like you said early on, right back to the start, it just was a bit of a shit show, wasn't it? It was a really poor quality match.
Yeah, there was for a collective group of players that cost as much as the group of players that we saw today to put forward that level of football was very disappointing and a little bit concerning, I think, for both clubs, because, like, let's be honest now, that is far from Chelsea's best 11, far from it. And I know we have a bunch of injuries as well, but they're missing a lot of players. This was an opportunity for us to go out and beat them today, and we never looked like doing it. Like, I would struggle to point to one real chance that we created in the match. We had a couple of half chances, but we'd no real chances in the match. Their best chances were the Silva one that hit the post on 2 minutes, and he may have been offside, and the Badiashile one from the set piece that Alisson made a decent save from. Other than that, I mean, 95 minutes of largely awful football. Mudrik threatened to create a bit of havoc. He had that one really good run where he danced around Milner about three times and then put the ball wide. And then there was the Milner foul, which was exactly what he had to do. Now, he should have been hooked immediately once he had the yellow card, because if Chelsea had been a bit smarter, they would have just fed Mudrik immediately after that and just kept having him run at Milner to try and get that second yellow. But we were awful. We were just awful. Like, our link play was non-existent. There was no connectivity between our front three. Trent came on, and God bless him, he tried to make things happen. You know, went in a couple of really good runs through the middle of their team, trying to make things happen, but couldn't get anything going. And then, you know, with each passing substitution that Klopp made, it just seemed to... I mean, Henderson came on, he ran up and down a bit and played one decent pass, but other than that, offered nothing really. Curtis Jones, to his credit, I thought he at least showed a bit of fight. It was the first time I'd watched Curtis and realised that Cody Gakpo actually has some similarities to him, that lack of explosive pace, that same sort of upright stance and the same kind of close control and dribbling ability. So you'd wonder if we've just bought the same player but taller. I didn't understand what Klopp set the team up to do today with that front three. And when he made that triple sub, it almost felt like he was settling for a draw. Like, it almost felt like he was settling for the draw. At least when he brought on Darwin for Naby, while it did have a negative effect on our shape, it felt like a let's try and win this game sort of move. Bringing Trent on for Milner seemed like the type of thing you'd do to try and win the game. But then when he brings on Henderson, Fab and Curtis, it kind of felt like he's settling for a draw here, because we almost went to a midfield four. Curtis was playing left, Henderson right, Fab and Thiago in the middle. And it almost seemed like we were playing for a draw at that point. Against Chelsea, missing a bunch of players in awful form.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked, and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, I think that fear and anxiety was just there, probably for both sides. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to finish the show with yourself in a minute if you have any sum up thoughts and get your plugs for the week. And Carl, why don't we do that now, yourself and myself, and have a recap on the whole match. Of course, if there's something else specific you want to say about that second half, please do. But just your overall assessment of what's going on here. In the greater scheme of things, I think we have a gap now until next Sunday, unless I'm wrong, which means that's quite a bit of time for this squad to get together and for some people to get a little bit closer coming back. That's the FA Cup game against Brighton. And I think there's another gap of another week until the next time we're out, which is Wolves at Molineux, and then a decent gap again until the Monday night football against Everton, where we play them at Anfield. So there are opportunities for recuperation, recovery, for the squad to work together and for something to possibly come out of this next period of time in terms of positivity. Is that Does that sound like something you think might happen?
I mean, it should, shouldn't it? But two things. One, that we've had gaps this season already. Not so much before the World Cup, but a couple of times we have, and we've come back and we've not done, or we've not looked like we've done anything at all. And then the other side of that is that previous seasons, we seem to be better once we're in a rhythm and playing every 3-4 days rather than a week or 2 weeks between matches. And we come back and it looks so, so sluggish. So my hope is that one, you know, if we've seen some steps forward today from, let's say, the midfield off the ball, not being as open, a bit more compact, hard working, all the rest of it, then maybe this trio keeps working together during the week. Or maybe it forces a couple of the players who have come out to be much, much better in training this week. And hopefully the whole intensity is raised because, you know, we do look better, especially going forward. We obviously need to be a lot better than we have been recently. We need to be, I think, I'm not sure, maybe training at a higher intensity or maybe training at a maybe just a more aggressive sort of level. Maybe that kind of thing has just not been there. But something has to be extra from what we have at the minute. It cannot just be a matter of we're working hard because, you know, you're in training, you're going to be working hard anyway. You're going to be doing, you know, the tactical setups off the ball and walking through our shape. But it's not translating to match day performances, which are match winning. And like, what is it now? 4 games, we've scored 1 goal, something like that. So it's there needs to be quite a lot of work done at the moment. And honestly, you play Brighton a couple of weeks after they've just spanked us. I don't think that's great. I mean, I know people will say, you know, opportunity to put it right and people to answer the critics and all that kind of thing. I think that the mindset of this team at the minute is a bit too brittle to be doing something like that. And if Brighton, you know, put 2-3 past us again, I do worry about where the rest of this campaign is going to go, to be perfectly honest.
I think that's fair, man. In terms of the week to come, obviously less pressure in terms of a game every 2 or 3 days for a while now, but no doubt you'll be producing bits and bobs. Do you have anything to let people know about that's coming up?
I'll probably have a Liverpool piece after the weekend on the Independent. There will be a couple of podcasts next week, I believe, since there'll be a bit more time to record some. And nothing else from me, but I do want to just mention one thing, and that is a very, very welcome return to the pitch for Sebastian Haller for Borussia Dortmund, who is back.
Mm.
That's a good news story if ever there was one, for sure. And Dave, to get your wrap-up thoughts on this oddly truncated Raw, because let's be honest, we're not just going to talk about things when there are nothing to talk about. So how would you sum up and do let folks know what is going on for you in the week to come as well?
I think we've covered pretty much everything there was to cover in the game, which was nothing. Nothing happened. It was just a bunch of lads running around getting their steps in for 90 minutes. We now sit ninth in the table, so we have gone up one spot. Brentford played this weekend, but we've played the same number of games and we're now ahead of them on goal difference. So we're eighth in the league. So that's a great achievement. We're on course for a 58-point season. Which is, you know, a remarkable thing. People, I've seen a bunch of people asking the question, how are we this far behind Arsenal? How has this happened? So I just want to give people a brief timeline of events here. December 2019, we're top of the league and running away with the title, and Arsenal are 10th in the Premier League table and a mess. Now, 3 years later, Arsenal are top of the Premier League and we're firmly in mid-table, a mess. Since then, they have a net spend of £325 million, including Trossard and the young centre-back they've brought in this month. And we have a net spend of £115 million, including Cody Gakpo. Now, that's a difference of £210 million across 3 years that they have spent without playing a single game of Champions League football. Now, I understand that their wage bill is significantly lower than ours, but so is their revenue. Their revenue is significantly lower than ours as well. But yet they have been willing to back their manager and spend money. And now top of the league, they're spending money again, strengthening from a position of power. If you go back even to the summer before that, the summer after we win the Champions League, they spent an extra 75 million net in that window, bringing in Kieran Tierney, Martinelli and Nicolas Pepe. And I know he flopped, but still, that puts them at 410 million net since we won the Champions League. But for us, ours is at 75 million because we made a 40 million profit the summer we won the Champions League. So 335 million more they've spent since we won the Champions League without playing a single Champions League game. Because they're willing to invest in their team because their owners have ambitions. And our owners have let our team stagnate. They've let our club stagnate. And it's cost us not only on the pitch, but it's also cost us Michael Edwards. It's cost us Ian Graham. It's cost us Julian Ward. And at some point, it's going to cost us Jurgen Klopp as well. Because there's absolutely no way, no matter what he says in public, that he can be happy to look around at his rivals and see a Chelsea team with a higher net spend in this transfer window than he has, not just a higher, but double the transfer spend in this window than he has in 4 years since winning the Champions League. There's no way he's happy looking at Arsenal doing that, looking at City buying whoever they want. Now, admittedly, they're a different case, but Arsenal don't have mega rich owners. They don't have mega rich owners at all. Kroenke isn't much more wealthy than FSG. Admittedly, his wife is, but that's her money, not his. This is the result of year-on-year underinvestment, year-on-year leaving ourselves short. And this has cost us multiple major trophies because there is nobody who will convince me we weren't a better team than City last year. But we were short in midfield and that cost us in important games, Brentford, Leicester, West Ham, Brighton at home. Those four games, win any of them and we win the league. The Champions League final, we were a better team than Real Madrid. But we were let down by our midfield because Thiago had to play half fit and somebody else played and had an absolute stinker who shouldn't have played because he'd been dreadful all season. But he had to play because with Thiago being half fit, Naby was needed to stay on the bench in case Thiago had to come off. Because you couldn't risk starting them both. Because what if they both break down? The season before, we couldn't challenge to retain our own title because our centre-backs got hurt, because we left ourselves short at centre-back. We were top at Christmas. We were brilliant the last 10 games. There was a 12-game run where we fell apart because we didn't have adequate cover at centre-back, which meant Fabinho had to be pulled to centre-back, so our midfield fell apart. And then when he got hurt, our defence fell apart. And the season before that, when we did win the league, we should have won the Champions League as well. But a lack of investment in the squad meant that when a couple of players were injured or had niggles, we didn't have adequate cover to come in. We have cost ourselves major trophies. Not we have not. The owners have cost us major trophies by the refusal to back the one good thing that they have achieved, which is convincing Jurgen Klopp to turn down every other club in Europe and take this job.
Can't argue with a word of that. And if you want further wallowing in the financial mire and questions thereabout, myself and Mo Chatro are going to be recording a Money Talks immediately after this, so do keep your ears out for that. Dave, of course, you'll have lots this week as well, as usual.
I do. I have two-footed Tuesday through Friday, Daily Red Tuesday through Friday. There'll be at least one, probably two Scouteds. I think I'm recording with Grizz on Wednesday again as well. And there might be something else that pops up. And the other thing I wanted to say, Trev, I'm disappointed we haven't done a ref watch because I thought Michael Oliver had an absolute shambles of a game. And the linesman that was running the side with the main stand side in the second half, I thought he was absolutely appalling as well. Absolutely appalling. They got every small decision they could possibly get wrong. And just in terms of Prick Watch, which we're bringing back for the first time in a while, Chelsea fans, all of them, 2 minutes in, always the victim as it's never your fault. They sang about God Save the Queen, who's dead. They sang about Steven Gerrard, who hasn't played for Liverpool in 7.5 years. They sang about fat Frank Lampard, who cared so much about them that he signed for Manchester City. And then they sang, "Is this a library?" Because, you know, Stamford Bridge is noted for its atmosphere. What a bunch of bellends.
Yeah, well deserving of the award, I think, this week. And it's a good spot for us to end because it's sort of about disgruntlement, which I think is the general feeling that all three of us have. And no doubt Guy as well, listening and producing at the same time. So a suitable note for us to end on. Like I said, do keep an ear out for Money Talks with Mo Chatrell. I'll be walking through some questions and Mo talking about the Deloitte Financial League and all the rest of it and the ownership. We'll have a good chat on that now in about half an hour, and that will be out soon after Raw for your listening pleasure or otherwise. Listen, of course, to everything that Dave and Carl are doing and keep it with us. We'll be back next week. Well, Guy will be back next week with FA Cup Raw, and we'll be back the following week when we kick back into the Premier League. So hope you can salvage something from the weekend. Still early. No cause for great despair. Just a bit meh, really, wasn't it? The whole thing. So like I say, thanks to Dave. Thanks to Carl. Thanks to producer Guy. I've been Trev Downey. We'll be back with you soon.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.